This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation Pop Experience. Pop Goes the Movies is back. We are here breaking down the latest entry in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. A polarizing movie, I guess. I don't know, polarizing may be strong, but didn't do well on Rotten Tomatoes, but seems to be doing okay box office wise. We're talking about Eternals. I am Andy Atherton. I am your host for this episode. Like I usually am, I'm usually the main guy here, but you know, I invite anybody at Placement Nation to do these shows. Tonight I have actually the other two thirds of the Pop Goes to the Couch crew here. I have Scott and Tim. Sean is on assignment once again. He is over on Olympus is whatever that planet is called. But let's introduce Scott though properly. Scott Shiflett, how are you, man?
Andy, I'm doing great. Glad to be here with Tim. We are missing Sean. He told me he was going to Madripoor, so we're gonna have to send out a search party if you're saying he's in Olympia. It's a little concerning, but yeah, I can't wait to talk Eternals. Felt like, you know, that Black Widow and Shang-Chi had came out, you know, months ago, just the way time moves now. And it felt like it was longer than, you know, just 2 months from, I think Shang-Chi came out in September and, you know, Eternals now in November. It felt like it was longer, but, you know, time moves different in COVID times.
Yeah. Amazingly, Shang-Chi's going to be on the Disney Plus 2 days after we record this. So it shows you the passage of time. And also Tim Capel is here. Tim, how are you?
I am well. I'm looking forward to watching the Shang-Chi, if you will, on Disney Plus, which I did not brave the COVID theaters or look. I just feel like if I'm going to die for a movie, that Shang-Chi, no matter how good it perhaps is or isn't, that maybe that wasn't the one that would be worth dying for.
Yes.
But maybe Eternals is ? We'll get into that.
Yeah. My girlfriend's the same way. Ellen, she's like, I'm only going for Marvel movies right now. That's all I'm risking it for.
Yeah. And honestly, I just say that I'm not really worried about it. It's a concern that people have.
Yeah, it is. No, trust me. Yeah. I think about it too. It's like mask on, mask off. Like, you know, I'm eating popcorn, so I'm keeping my mask off. That's how I am. So
I feel you.
All right. So Eternals, that's the saga of the Eternals, a race of immortal beings who lived on Earth and shaped its history and civilization. Now, me personally, as I've said many times, I am not a comics guy. I know the movies, videos, and stuff like that, and I know what these fine gentlemen, in addition to other big-time comics people, whether it's Sean who joins us or if it's Miranda or Jenny or Scott Criscolo, all of our big comic nerds here at the Placement Nation family. But I was like, this looks like something. Like I didn't know what to think going in, which is probably good for me because I went in kind of a blank slate. I liked a lot of the actors involved. Chloe Zhao is I don't know if I've ever seen her work, but you know, she just won an Oscar and this is a beautifully shot movie and the CG is really good, I think, also. Mm-hmm. But you know, last time we got a relatively unknown to us normal folk was Guardians of the Galaxy, and that raised the bar really high. You know, this movie, I'm trying to give my Reader's Digest because these guys can really I'm going to dive a little deeper than me. It did drag. I think they could have shaved about 20 minutes off it and still been okay. But I enjoyed a lot of the action sequences. Every sequence with a deviant. Oh, by the way, spoiler. This is a big time spoiler review. So if you haven't seen it, we appreciate you listening. But go watch the movie and then come back and listen. I enjoyed it. It's a big team. They had a lot to do in this movie. You know, you had to intro everybody, give some backstory, kind of tell them where they are in the whole scope of the MCU, tell their story, and then lead us into the next story, which I think they did a pretty good job. Scott, we'll start with you. What were your thoughts when you first heard of Eternals, and And I don't know, you're a trailer guy. I know there are some people that don't watch trailers or try to avoid them. But what were you thinking going in, and what did you know about them based on any comics you may have read with them?
Well, I had some red flags. I'd never heard of the Eternals, which I'm not. I mean, I'm a comic guy, but I'm not deep comic. Like that's why I always like pass to like Tim and Sean usually when we're doing our pods together. Yeah. I wasn't that big. I will say I saw the first trailer and I was like, this movie's gonna suck. And then the second trailer, actually, I was like, damn, okay, now I'm seeing something I want to see here, and I was interested. So I usually have a weird movie trailer thing where I'll try to just watch one trailer unless I'm at a movie theater and I can't like close my eyes and tune out for 3 minutes, because that would be just weird. But no, I didn't know what they were. I wouldn't, you know, like with the Guardians of the Galaxy, I didn't really know what they were. That was a good thing you bringing up. And I was like, okay. And, you know, we'll get to it, but I liked it. So, I mean, we'll explain more, but yeah, I was digging it.
Yeah, I know. I don't know any people personally, but I know of like other podcasts I've listened to where they literally will close their eyes and put their fingers in their ears in movie theaters. And that's a little weird. You go a long way to avoid being spoiled. I mean, you know, you do you, man. Tim, what were your thoughts about going into Eternals, and what did you know about them from the comics?
So I'll just say this, for comics Eternals, even people who are real old school comics fans and very deep into comics lore don't care about the Eternals. Like, I've never come across anybody like in comics fan, like before comics like blew up in Hollywood or anything, just, you know, you talk to people online, you talk to people in real life who are fellow comics fans, and not once do you cross paths with somebody who is like a real big Eternals fan in the wild. It just doesn't exist. But that doesn't necessarily mean it can't translate to film. I think maybe the chief difference, though, between a concept like Eternals and Guardians of the Galaxy, hell, even going back to Iron Man, which, you know, who is a big comics character but doesn't have a lot of mainstream recognition, you still have either a really cool concept at the core, even if it was never a big seller of a lot of comics historically, if it's got a cool hook, which Guardians of the Galaxy absolutely did. So I was one of the folks that when I saw previews for Guardians of the Galaxy and saw how they were translating that to film, I thought, oh, I could see this being a big hit, because even though it's not a super popular comic, this is going to have a lot of mass appeal to a wide audience because it is such a cool concept with cool characters. And with Iron Man, just so very cinematic, even more so than what you would have in a comic book, which is, you know, all static images, just a great vehicle for film in that character. Eternals, I don't know that it's, you know, it's kind of a weak comic and a weak concept on top of it. So has a lot of things working against it. I was definitely a little ambivalent going into the film, although, you know, trailers look fairly intriguing. To tell you the truth, I think the one character I was looking forward to the most was that of Dane Whitman, who is ultimately not in the film a whole lot, which I don't think I really expected him to be.
But I expected more from seeing,
maybe a little bit more.
Because I didn't know who Dane Whitman was, but I know there's fucking Jon Snow. Sorry to cut you off, Tim.
Yeah.
I was expecting Jon Snow, a.k.a. Kit Harington, but he'll always be Jon Snow to me, was going to have a bigger part in this movie. But we'll get to...
Yeah, I didn't know. I had no idea. But I'm like, they ain't putting Jon Snow in. It's just to be like a little love interest on the side. That ain't happening. So something's up with him. Yeah.
So when I saw that character was going to be in the film and was cast, Kit Harington's a big get. I'm not saying I'm a huge Game of Thrones fan, but I know that that's a pretty big get, and seems kind of almost too perfect for the character. I absolutely love the character of, I'd say, you know, Black Knight from the comics. I'm sure everybody at this point, if they've seen the movie, have gone on to watch all of the breakdowns on YouTube and where things are leading and future setups, future characters. They sort of, you get a pretty clear indication of where we're going with him. And he's like my favorite B-list character in all of comics, I want to say. So I'm like, I'm way more interested in him and in that character than any of the titular characters. And I felt that way going in. And if anything was had me looking forward to this film, it was just the potential and the promise of really what the future held. Because I knew we weren't going to get like a lot of, hey, now he's the Black Knight in this movie. You know, just it didn't make sense to me going in, but I don't know. It's when all was said and done, right? We look at the reviews, and I mean, it's pretty much the definition of mixed. You go on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's hovering. I think they did dip below 50%, right? It's like the worst. They're saying worst reviewed film since Incredible Hulk, which
obviously
really...
no one reviewed the dark doo-doo world of Thor 2. So,
well, for a while that was
the dark Thor, the doo-doo shit world. If you're mm-hmm. Keeping score at home,
I think one thing to keep in mind though is that Rotten Tomatoes does not measure the intensity of positivity or the intensity of negativity. It's just the consensus review, right? So if you're overall just, I kind of didn't like the movie, that's considered negative, right? Or if you're, it was pretty decent, that's considered a positive review. You don't have to be over the moon in your assessment in order to wind up with whatever the review is. It's just the consensus take seems to be, meh. I don't know that there's a whole lot of this was the worst thing I've ever seen types of reviews. I'm not seeing those types of takes on this movie. So I think that's important to keep in mind when you're going by Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I think people are really hungry for what's coming next, which is Spider-Man. You know, people, we haven't gotten, you know, that big Cap movie, or we haven't had a Thor movie. You know, Black Widow was good, but it was a prequel of, and the main character has, you know, died. You know, it was, you know, we got Shang-Chi, who was, I really enjoyed that movie. Sean's probably going to cringe when I say this, but I actually love Awkwafina. He and I have said that before. I think she's hysterical. I didn't really understand her character, her arc and her purpose, but, you know, I was down with her. And then you had this. I mean, people, like, you know, when you had like a B-level movie, so to speak, but then there was that A-level coming, Black Panther was right around the corner, whatever. I'm trying, like, whenever the MCU had like dipped a little bit, there was something that was gonna shoot you right back up. And a bad MCU movie, again, like we talk about this, you know, on my Disney pod, like a bad Disney movie, like a bad MCU movie is better than like a shit ton of other
it's
movies
still pretty
out
good,
there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think this movie, I could understand people like not getting it. You know what I mean? Like, so to speak, me, like I went in there and I'm like, I'm trying to kind of figure out what's going on here. And I still, like, as soon as I got a movie, I'm like tapping you guys. I'm like, okay, what is this? What is this? Explain to me, because I have no idea really kind of what's going on. So let's talk about the cast, though. So it's a large cast. I mean, there are, what, 7, 9 of them? I lost count. But we have
10 Eternals.
10 Eternals. So we got we'll go through it according to the IMDb here. We got Gemma Chan, who is Cersei. We got Richard Madden, who is Icarus. And Julia Jolie as Thena. We have Salma Hayek as Ajak. Kit Harington, like you mentioned. Dane Whitman. Kumail Nanjiani as Kingo, who steals the movie every time he's in it. Leah McHugh as Sprite. Brian Tyree Henry as Fastos. Lauren Ridloff as Makari. Barry Keoghan as Druig. Ma Dong Seok.
Druig sucks.
Don Lee as Gilgamesh. And then we had, those were the Eternals. And then we had Arush Patel as Karun, who was great in the movie. He kind of played like he was the audience surrogate, so to speak, I guess. Bill Skarsgård, who I had no idea was even in this movie, was
the Crow, Luis. This was Ant-Man,
he's the Luis. Yeah, Bill Skarsgård, who voiced Crow, and then you had other characters that you know came along, and then of course
I had no idea that was Bill Skarsgård.
Yeah,
who's Crow?
Crow is the deviant that talked.
Didn't know that was his name. I just called him asshole.
Yeah.
Did they do did they mocap him or just do his voice?
I don't know. I'd have to.
I don't know. It kind of looked weird like him, so maybe they mocapped him.
He was a strange looking individual. Yeah.
So for me though, I've never watched Game of Thrones. It's on my to do shame list. I thought Salma Hayek was good. I thought Angelina Jolie was good in her reduced, kind of smaller role. Gemma Chan, if Sean was here, he'd be like, she's on the train, and I agree. Richard Madden was great.
Can't see me shaking my head, but
yeah. Richard Madden was great as Icarus, who's the Superman basically is. So I'm gonna be like,
I want to hear it.
I'm channeling my inner Sean here.
Wait, we're talking how Superman is just great value Icarus?
No, we're not.
Kumail Nanjiani, I loved it. Sprite, Fastos was good. Lauren Ridloff, I'm probably the only person of all Place Nation who's still watching any Walking Dead, and she's really good on that, so I was happy to see her. I thought Gilgamesh, probably one of my favorite characters in the entire movie, very upset when he dies. And yeah, Druig, I was kind of like, this guy, like the whole time I'm looking at him is that's not the Flash, right? No, it's not him. It's not the same guy. It's not Ezra Miller.
Great. Oh yeah, he does have a bit of a great value Ezra Miller going.
Yeah,
on.
He does. So Tim, what are your thoughts on the cast? Who are some of the standouts? Who are some of the ones that you kind of like on?
I'm a little bit torn because I liked Gemma Chan's performance as Cersei.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I love how they wrote her character, only because I do have a degree of attachment to comics Cersei. I know I said no one cares about Eternals in the comics, but and that's true. But I she's a character. She is the one Eternal who has like kind of a long history with the Avengers and a very developed and very defined personality. And she's kind of a party girl, kind of fun loving, but also with a lot of soul. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that really came through in this version of Cersei, who was more much more grounded. I mean, she's our point of view character, right? Mm-hmm. If there's any one protagonist amongst these 10 Eternals, it's Cersei. And she just, as a character, came off as rather flat to me. But I don't really find any fault with the performance. I will say, we internally have bickered a lot over the comparisons of the character Icarus to Superman. I would say weak, simple minds who are unable to differentiate different characters may draw these sorts of conclusions, but yes, he is a Superman-like character who, contrasted with Cersei, I thought they did a great job really rounding out and developing and getting that sort of third act twist in the film where he's kind of the villain, but not in a way that villains are traditionally depicted in these Marvel films. Like, nobody's going out of their way, oh, we must stop him now. It's just sort of, he has his motivations. Other characters are in conflict. Some sit out the climax altogether, as we see with Kingo.
I have a problem with that, but we'll get to that.
Okay. But yeah, I really like who played it? Richard Madden.
Madden, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm trying to, what else have I seen him in?
He's in He's in 1917. He's in Rocket Man as well. As okay, John, so he plays John Reed in Rocket Man.
Wasn't he in Game of Thrones?
Yeah, he's in Game of Thrones.
But so nothing I would have seen, it sounds like. Which, okay, that's fine. But, yeah, I like what they did with him. I like that they can make him the quote-unquote villain without totally vilifying him, if that makes sense. Kingo, Kamel, my man, who I kind of love and everything, you know, he has a very interesting arc in this movie. I think of the 10 Eternals, who, you know, can be kind of hard to keep track of all these characters, considering we're seeing them for the first time, and they all have, like, very unusual names, and it's like, who is Fastos again? You know, you're sort of out of that.
What's their power? Why is he doing?
Exactly.
That was kind of me. Like I almost, like, wish I, like, had, like, a scorecard or a cheat sheet, like, in front of me. This is what this one is.
Yeah, and you're going, oh, that's right. Makari exists. And it's just, you sort of lose track of him.
You know what? I honestly, at times, was getting, like, a Power Rangers, Voltron vibe, like, you know, they're all like these individual abilities, and you get them all together, it's one badass giant thing, which kind of does happen later on. I did say out loud, I'm like, what are they doing, fucking Voltron?
Voltron. But the character of Kingo, I think I responded to the most just on a pure character level. As opposed to others who, like, I would say, like, Sprite and Druig, like, I just outright hated. The others, there were a lot that I was just sort of indifferent to. And then you had Kingo, who was really awesome. And the aforementioned Fastos, who I do know who that is. I'm just using the example of goofy name. And Gilgamesh was really, came across really strongly as well. Excuse me. So it's sort of, I'm not sure if that was most people's kind of takeaway or pecking order when it came to the individual characters, but I guess you have to have some, with that many characters, look, they're not all going to make it out alive. Some are going to be kind of throwaway. So at the end of the day, I think I was pretty pleased with what we were left with, but I'll put it this way. I understood why they kept the characters they did on the board, even if they weren't universally my favorites among the bunch. So I don't know about you, Scott. What do you think? What did you make of all these 10 plus characters?
Well, to be honest, you know, the big names going in for, like, casual moviegoers was Angelina Jolie and Salma Hayek, and we didn't really see that much of them, which I thought was good, and it subverted expectations, because I was like, I mean, I know some people aren't the biggest fan of Angelina Jolie. Like, I liked her in Wanted. I think that's, like, the only movie I think I've really liked her in. So
Mr. and Mrs. Smith, though, too.
She ruined their relationship. I can't deal
with it. You're like, damn it, if Nicole Kidman didn't get injured after dropping out of that movie, what would have happened?
Exactly. But no, she's good in that. But, like, you know, Salma Hayek, you know, as being, like, I guess she's the leader and, you know, sort of seen as the mother because everyone always comes to her. I enjoyed her, but, like, and, you know, with Icarus, I know I get my shots in at Tim, but, you know, his you know, we're with the wrestling feed. His heel turn, I did not see coming at all in the movie. I thought that was played great. Cersei, you know, Tim brought up good points. She was good. The character was kind of bland, but you see that she cared for humans by giving the dagger. Kingo, I really enjoyed, like, when they were saying how he's the Bollywood movie star, and he has it was his grandfather, his dad, and now him, but it's all the same person because they can't die. Mm. I thought it was great. Mm. Sprite
sucked.
Was I the only one getting I think the character was Claudia in Interview with the Vampire, like Kirsten Dunst's character. I was getting that kind of vibe, like,
oh, like, yeah, good kind call.
Of like annoying like that.
Yeah,
like basically like a grown-up stuck in a child body.
Yeah, that's very true. I did like Fastos character. I really enjoyed that because like he wasn't in the movie that long, but he had a little arc where you see like where he blames himself for Hiroshima in 1945, and then you see like, you know, he hates humans, and then like to do the flash forward, and you know, he's married with a husband and has a kid. And I really like that. And Makari, we didn't see her a lot, but when we did, I liked her a lot. And Druig, the only thing I liked about him was his relationship with Makari. Like, the rest of the time, he could just fuck off.
I didn't understand their relationship. It just felt so, well, we need something else for both of them, right? Because they're just kind of here. So, here we go. Romance. How about it? Like, just wasn't.
Actually, the director said that came like later because they realized the chemistry on set, so that's why they added that stuff.
Would have been nice if they captured some of that chemistry on film. Sorry.
Gilgamesh I liked a lot, and I was upset that he died. I did not see him dying. I actually thought Phaistos was going to die and Makari. In addition to Ajax and everything, and Icarus flying into the sun, which is just ridiculous. But
if we had like a big board up and we said who's gonna die, who's gonna make it out, yeah, Gilgamesh would have been one of mine that would have made it. So, and a couple others I think would have gotten killed off.
And I will say, Tim, because I knew nothing about Black Knight, and with you being and like they always showed, you know, his character Dane Whitman, played by Kit Harington, asking Cersei, why didn't you go after Thanos? I thought he was going to be the bad guys. Like, why are y'all doing something now when you literally could have stopped Thanos? So I thought he was going to be the bad. I thought he was going to be the bad guy.
I kind of did
absolutely
too.
Nothing.
Yeah. Even knowing what I know, I thought, oh, they're going to do like a, because there's a precedent for the Black Knight being a villain. In comics, the guy who, prior to Dane Whitman, there was a Black Knight who was an Iron Man villain, who was his uncle, who was Dane Whitman's uncle. And so I wondered if they would just kind of skip all that and make Dane the villainous Black Knight, and if they redeemed him in some other movie later down the line, so be it, maybe. But yeah, I kind of thought that might be the twist, because it would be a very... it would be a very MCU thing to do, I feel like. He's not a big enough character that you absolutely have to, like, respect the sanctity of the source material or whatever. You know, they tend to put those types of twists on the lesser characters from the comics just because it's not what people are going to see coming. So I kind of wondered.
Yeah, because also, like, you know, he's sort of dating Cersei at the start of the movie, and, like, you know, Icarus shows up, and, like, you see that Cersei and Icarus have been married for thousands of years. I thought it was going to be, like, Cersei goes back with Icarus, that drives him mad, and he's, he knew all this the whole time. He just wanted her to admit it type deal. I'm glad they didn't go that way, because that would have been very, very, I love the MCU, but very MCU-y. It would have felt like, you know, Zebediah's heel turn in Iron Man to me. So I'm glad they did not go that way. But no, I enjoyed, like, you know, Druig, he has a very punchable face, if we're still doing that.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not the most attractive person, but, like, I just want to catch him with a Street Fighter uppercut.
But I marked out when it looked like Icarus dropped him into that volcano.
Yeah.
I was like, yes, but sadly he lived.
No, it was a nice globetrotting movie, and shot wonderfully by Chloe Zhao.
Chloe Zhao, yeah. It was beautiful. I loved all the deviant fights. I loved every one of them. I thought they were all well done. They were a little different each. You know, you had the deviant, you had the flying deviant, and you had like the lion deviant. Again, it's like fucking Voltron. You know, you had all this going on here, but I liked the movie. It just, my big thing was, you know, it dragged. My son was getting a little, you know, fidgety. I mean, you know, he does, you know, he's got hands in his pants anyway, but you know, but it wasn't like his attention wasn't getting cast. And I, there were a couple of times like I kind of like looked at my watch and I'm like, oh my God, that's it. Let's pick this movie up here, people. Come on, we need to
keep it moving.
You know, it was kind of like, yeah, don't lose me here, because I'm like loving the scenery. I'm loving, like, you know, the nonlinear storytelling at times. But yeah, it was like kind of like, you know, let's keep going here, people. I mean, yeah. There were a couple of things I kind of saw. I was like, kind of shook my head, like, you know, when Fastos was like doing like, okay, I give you this internal combustion, whatever the hell it is. They're like, no. I'm like, okay, here's a plow. Like he just right. like right there, he comes up with that right there. I'm like, okay, that was kind of weird.
You know, and I think part of that is you definitely do feel the length of this movie as opposed to maybe some other MCU entry. I mean, all of the MCU movies at this point are, I feel like, at least 2.5 hours, and it's just a matter of the pacing. How does it feel actually watching it? And this is one where you're like, did it really have to be 2.5 hours? I think it's maybe not helped by that very dense, like, info dump right at the probably hour mark where Cersei, like, convenes with Arishem or whatever, and it's like, we are on the world engine or whatever they call it, and I'm a giant space god who's now talking to you, and it's just like, is this really how they're going to do this? I don't know. It kind of took me out of it when they did all, and he's just explaining the backstory, and it's like, this is what the movie is about, and you're like, okay, all right, I'll follow you, but at the same time, I still have some questions, and that goes on for a bit, and it just has a way of, like, slowing the movie down, and I just feel like there's a more elegant way of doing that than the space god literally scoops her up to explain the plot of the movie. Like, it just...
See, I didn't...
And I don't know what the answer is, but it just didn't really work.
I didn't have a problem with the pacing of the movie because, like, last Friday I saw Eternals in theaters, and I thought it was paced wonderfully. I know we have different opinions, but, like, I never looked at my clock, my watch or anything. But I did, like, then I saw Dune the next day, and I will say Dune's a better movie, personal opinion, but Dune had multiple times where I was like, what the fuck are we doing right now? And I, like, never felt that in with Eternals, which I don't know. But I thought Dune was a better movie, but there was times where I was like, I don't need this motherfucker just looking at the sand. So, but no, like, I mean, I get everyone's point with that, but yeah.
So let's talk about the plot a little bit. We've touched on. Tim was just mentioning it. So basically the gist is the Eternals are not human. They're kind of like robots they're not human. They're flesh and blood, but they can't die.
They're genetic constructs.
Yeah, genetic constructs. But their job is to advance civilization on a planet and incur growth population to the point of where they have, you know, reached a certain point, and then a celestial can be born from the core of the planet. So basically they're like, you know, Earth is like a thing of, like, you know, pigs being raised for slaughter. Basically that's what we were. Mm-hmm. Well, humans were being evolved and raised for that, and Cersei, you know, Ajax wanted to stop it, and it gets killed by Icarus, and then Cersei takes over as a leader, and she decides to go rogue, and then, you know, we have this giant head thing that kind of looked like Galactus coming out, and basically, yeah, like, and Thanos kind of fucked up the plan by 5 years because, you know, he snapped out half of the existence, and then, you know, Tony's, or actually, no, the Hulk snap brought everybody back, so that kind of
In addition to the people who were born in the intervening 5 years, who added to the balance. Like, the impression I got was, like, Earth was pretty close to the precipice. I don't know what do they call it, the singularity or the
awakening.
The whatever the term they use for the
we're close to being a fish that you don't have to throw back.
Yeah, very, very close. But then Thanos pooped everybody out of existence, and it's like, well, kind of back to the drawing board. And but then everybody came back, and there were a bunch of people born in the years, in the 5 years where, you know, everybody was gone. So it was like, oh, well, now we're way over the limit, right? So we're actually behind schedule now on the emergence? Yeah. I still don't know if it's the right
singularity.
I don't think it's singularity. I just said that.
Sorry.
It's the
emergence. Thank you. I'll get it right eventually. Yeah. So then we were over the limit, and it's like, okay, we're behind schedule now. We got to get this bitch born, and it's gonna. So this is borrowing a lot of ideas from different sources, and I sort of geeked out when they did establish the Earth as just a glorified incubator for a celestial. Comes out of a maxi series called Earth X, which I don't think they ever. It's like an alternate Marvel future kind of thing. So I don't think they ever made that like canonical as far as mainstream Marvel. I mean, they might have since then, but it's just a really cool idea to me that, oh, that's where celestials come from. They're born out of literal planets. And the Eternals get kind of a different origin, but I mean, I guess it still kind of works. I will say that, did the Deviants really need to be in this movie?
Felt like a red herring as being the true bad guys.
Yeah, they were.
It's just something there to punch, right? So that we can have some action scenes. But, like, what was the explanation that the Celestials, they created the Deviants, which was a later reveal.
Yeah.
Tim. Sean's going to kill me for this. This sort of felt like in the Green Lanterns where where the Guardians created the Manhunters.
Uh-huh.
And then the Manhunters went rogue, and that's why they created the Green Lantern Corps.
It really does.
Yeah. It's like, okay, Celestials created the Deviants. Deviants went rogue, killing everything. And they created the Celestials. Yeah, can't wait for Sean's comment on that.
No, you're totally right. I never would have thought of that. You're totally right. Because it's not what the comics origin is for those at all. It was just Celestials did early experiments on early what would become mankind ultimately, these different, you know, primitive life forms. And so their genetic experiments resulted in like three strains of humanity. Like one is the Deviants, one is the Eternals, the other is what we would, you know as baseline humans, and eventually mutants. You know, that's what that third strain would evolve into. But it was all Earth-based, you know, and it was all just them tinkering around with, you know, primitive life forms, and they'd done that on multiple different planets. So, you know, they changed that up to, so that now basically, you know, every planet that hosts a celestial has its own set of Eternals that's kind of what my takeaway was, coming out of this movie. So, you know, we see the ones that are hosted by Earth, and I kind of had some plot issues, which sounds like Scott, you did as well, but I just had a lot of unanswered questions, such as, again, what was really the point of the Deviants to be in this movie? It just seemed like the Celestials create them. Oh shit, they went into business for themselves. So now we create the Eternals to keep them in check. And that's like their entire mission. Seemed like there was an easier way of going about that, you know? Like if you're a total giant space god, couldn't you just be like, I'm gonna snap my fingers and no more deviants?
Yeah, you know? Or like, or just wipe away the whole world and it's like, we'll start over.
Yeah, start over. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, one of those, like, if they did that, there'd be no movie. Kind of
well, lay an egg in another planet. You know, go to Mars where you didn't unleash these terrible, awful life forms.
Scott, what are your thoughts on the overall plot and what's going on in this movie?
It felt like maybe another reason why people didn't really like it, because we hadn't really had origin movies in a while. Like, Shang-Chi was an origin movie, but it didn't really feel like that to me. But this felt like a true Iron Man 1 origin movie type.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe that's what people are having problems with. And, like, there's very little plot. Like, you know, Iron Man with the plot, it's, like, about him becoming Iron Man. Like, yeah, Zebediah's there. But, like, you know, it's more of a plot device type deal. And the rings, the 10 rings, you know, thing. But with this, like, Tim brought up a good point that I hadn't even thought about. And I love the movie. The deviants really serve no purpose. Like, I wasn't really concerned about him because we saw Gilgamesh kill one before he was overpowered. Like, so it didn't really seem like that big of a threat. Like, if these guys all banded together, I mean, Cersei did that badass thing where she turned a deviant into a tree, which was pretty awesome in the fight.
They did kill, what's her face? Salma Hayek, though. Ajax.
Well, that was because it was like 6-on-1 because Icarus threw her down right there at let a pig to slaughter. So
saying, like, it wasn't like they got jobbed out the whole movie. You know, they did get their win in here and there.
And it's not like Salma Hayek had like cool powers. She could just heal. So it's like, all right, well, we're gonna keep stabbing you until you aren't quick enough to heal me.
Yes, very good point. So yeah, ultimately the deviants don't serve, and then like they do this weird thing where that one evolves as it absorbs their powers, and it's like, okay, so are we supposed to now have some kind of sympathetic feelings towards this deviant because it's suddenly intelligent and it's more than just a mindless rampaging monster? It's like, does it deserve, you know, to live in the way that, you know, humans deserve to? It's a part of the planet just like human beings, and it's wrong to kill. Like, I thought maybe it was going for that, but it just sort of waved it off and said, no, we got to kill it at the end.
Well, the deviants were kind of like, to me, like, what would happen if the creatures, the beasts from Avatar, had babies with the aliens from Edge of Tomorrow? And there you go. That's what we get.
I mean, yeah, really. Tim, you bring up a good point. They could have done something like that because, like, you know, we see that last deviant is talking, seems to have feelings because he's like, yeah, the Celestials threw us out too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay. And then it's like,
they're almost leaning into a morality play. Yeah, yeah. Like they're setting up this almost this ethical question, and then they just are like, nah, never mind. We're not doing that.
And then Athena's like, let me chop this motherfucker in half.
Yeah, yeah. And you're like, oh, okay. And again, the whole philosophical quandary of, you know, and it's like a glorified version of the trolley problem, you know, where if this Celestial is born, well, there goes Earth, you know, 7 billion people, not to mention all the other, you know, forms of life on this planet are now instantly annihilated. But that's just part of the cosmic order, right? This Celestial is then going to do what Celestials do, which we are told is create stars. Fine. Okay. And stars will then support life throughout the galaxy. So we need Celestials in order for untold galaxies and therefore future life to be born, right? And that the big idea there is it seems like a bad idea to just kill one, you know, to be like, all right, cool, here's this celestial coming into existence. We can't do that because this one planet will die. Ergo, we just kill the celestial. I don't know. I mean, it's really not keeping with that whole the needs of the many, is it?
Yeah.
Even if the many have yet to be born, I don't know. It's like kind of this mind fuck, but to put that out there and again, just have this very simple, like ill thought out answer to the problem. It mm-hmm. is just, it doesn't seem right. Like you should, if you're really so special, then you should figure out how to have it both ways. You need to not only save the planet, but have this celestial be born and go on to do what celestials do. Like that would be impressive, but no, we just go ahead and kill it. That's that.
Yeah. Or like it's almost like a, you guys know what balut is. It's a Filipino dish that it's like a partially fertilized duck egg. If you like this thing got like it's like partially sticking out and but we killed it right there. It's like Easter Island ahead there.
Yeah, that is about what that
yeah.
half emerged or quarter emerged celestial was like. Pretty yeah. fucked up.
Okay, well, we're talking about that part. Well, what do you guys think of the final battle? I enjoyed it, you know, even though it wasn't, you know, I could only imagine what it would have been like if they had full, you know, the full lineup there to become the Unibrain or whatever the fuck they called it.
Unibrain? No, the Brainstorm.
Brainstorm. Yeah. So, Scott, what do you think of them? Because I kind of like it when there's like the group team up on the one villain where you got the one doing this, one doing that. You know, they, you know, this is your job, this is that job. So I was digging that final battle. What'd you think of it?
All right, Tim, you say that I'm always an MCU homer. Mark it down.
It's a mark.
November 10th. I have a fucking problem with this.
Okay.
See, I have a problem.
I told you what my problem with it was. It just...
Yes. Icarus does his heel turn, and then he takes Sprite with him, because they just want everyone to die. And then Kingo is, like, backs out. So we're like, okay.
I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Well, Sprite went because she was in love with him. Because yes. Druid told that really good... I really loved that screenwriting right there, because that was... You know, that really good comparison to Tinkerbell being in love with Peter Pan. I was like, oh, no shit, really? And like, so that's why Sprite went with him.
Yes. So they leave, and like we have like this battle where Sprite stabs Cersei. Straight up stabs her. Gonna kill her. Oh. Leave her for dead. And then Druid takes out Sprite, hits her in the head with the rock. And then we see like... I will say Phaistos and Icarus have a good battle where we see Phaistos like wielding all the stuff he's created, and he said he's always wanted to clip his wings, which is cool. That's a badass line as well. So I'm jumping ahead to the very end right here, and like, you know, they do like the mind meld, the Unibrain to like bring down and freeze the Celestial. My problem is at the very end here where they make Sprite a human and she starts growing up. And then we see Cersei's like, make sure to write me, as like Sprite's playing on her phone. And Kingo's there and is now going to raise Sprite now. But, you know, 20 minutes ago, Sprite yeah. fucking put a knife in your back, Cersei. And Kingo was so much of a bitch that he was like, we're going to fucking, and then like we're friends again. I'm sorry, Tim, Andy, if you're like, I'm like, hey, guys, we're going to have to fight like Sean here to take him out. And you guys are like, nah, we're good. And like then we had the battle. And then, like, y'all come back. We're not going to be friends after that. Like
well, you know, my million-dollar man, we had this blood feud, but now I'm king, and you give me the scepter. We're cool. God, that's how it feels.
Yes, and it's just like...
yeah.
It makes no sense to me. I mean, like, I did like them working together as one to take it out, but... And then, like, you know, Thena just... kills, like, we see her being a great battler, but she has, like, you know, celestial COVID or something, so she...
I'm sorry.
so, like...
Mod 3, yeah.
Yeah, So she has that, and then like we see her take out the deviant, which is pretty cool because it's a cool visual, her slicing, because like when the deviant like kills the Celestials, it takes away like their powers. So like, you know, he had Gilgamesh's hand, and like he's talking with Gilgamesh's voice, and like he says something, says remember who you are, and like that snaps her back from, you know, COVID. Mm-hmm. And then she kills it. That was okay, but like basically jobbed out the deviant, in my opinion, which we've already spoken about at nauseum. But
mm-hmm.
You know, Icarus is supposed to be this good fighter, and then like he fails, and he just says fuck it and just flies off into the sun. So it's like
yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I think what they're going, and this is not me trying to defend the movie, because I pretty much agree with you. I think what they were going for was, this is a group of characters, like these people have been alive for centuries, and they've fallen in and out of love many times with each other, been in and out of conflict many times with each other, and it's just like, this is just like another bad day at the office for them kind of thing, where, you know, there's literal backstabbing and walking away from a fight. And it's just like, at the end of the day, oh, we're a family. We've been through worse. We'll continue to go through worse. It's just, you know, that's how it is with us. But I mean, we didn't really get that. I don't think they really got that across, just in terms of what we learn about these characters, other than the movie establishing that, yes, they're very long lived. It's not like we spent a whole lot of time with any of them individually or even collectively, for that matter, for that kind of closeness or that kind of familial bond to come through. Especially given where, when we start the film, they're all broken up and scattered. So yeah, for everybody to just be like, oh shucks, sorry I stabbed you in the heat of battle like that. Yeah, sorry I peaced out on you and all is forgiven. It does ring a little hollow, I would agree.
Like, it would have been different if, like, you know, they needed one last person. And that's when Kumail shows up. And he's like, I've been watching and I'm here to, like, save the day. But it's like, nope, next time we see him is him and Karun are putting Sprite's bags into the car, because he's like, you're going to have to go to school now. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, some other things. Yeah. Sorry. I know, okay. It feels like I'm trashing the movie. I'm really not. It's just, I think they had just so many high-minded concepts and really interesting ideas to just turn it into, well, it's another like basic MCU climax kind of thing is a real shame to me. And I don't, again, understand how these characters, who are creations of an immortal space god. I talked about the Deviants going into business for themselves, to say nothing of the Eternals going into business for themselves. They can just decide to like rebel against their programming, essentially, and kill the Celestial that they're supposed to protect and nurture into existence. And Arishem just doesn't have a problem with that, or doesn't do anything about that until like the very last scene of the movie, where he's like, I don't know if that was real cool, so I'm gonna steal your memories and decide based on that if humanity is worth a shit. Again, it just seems very convoluted when he could just scoop them up at any time and say, hey, this isn't the plan, guys. I'm gonna wipe your minds right now, reprogram you, send you back down there to do what you're supposed to do. Like, shouldn't he be keeping a pretty close eye on things, considering we're, you know, days away from the shit, I forgot it.
Emergence.
Like, what is Arishem doing? Just sleeping on the job? I mean,
yeah, I don't know.
They kill the Celestial, and then he wakes up the next day and goes, oh shit. They can't find out about this. I got to do something.
Yeah, kind of. All right, so we get to the end of this movie. We have a couple of scenes to talk about. So let's kind of do a roll call, though, and see where everybody is and kind of, like, see when they could show up again. Well, I mean, some of them are in the mid-credits scene. So off the board is Ajak, Icarus, mm-hmm. and Gilgamesh. They are all dead.
Well, Andy, it's came out that Salma Hayek said that she has multi-picture deal.
Well, they could be flashbacks, though. You don't know that.
Yes, but just...
So, well, also, it's like comics. Who's really dead?
Well, we saw when Arishem created the Celestials that they're basically just copy and paste of everything. Yeah. So that's how we may be able to see Icarus again or Ajax. Yeah. Is just be like, you know.
Well, these incarnations, let's just say,
yes,
of these characters. All right, Sprite is no longer an Eternal. She's human. Okay, and then we got Cersei. Kingo and Phaistos are all on Earth doing their own thing separately. I mean, Kingo is with Sprite. And then we got Thena, Makari, and Druig are on the ship, which I can't remember the name of at the moment. And we get to, you know, of course, it's Marvel. So we got two scenes. We got a mid and then a post-credit scene. And in the mid-credit scene, we get...
Andy, sorry to cut you off. At the very end, Cersei, Kingo, and Phaistos get taken by Arishem.
That's right. Sorry. My bad.
No worries. They get taken by Arishem, where we had said before, where, you know, he's gonna basically mind wipe them and see if their memories, if the humans are worth saving. So that's how it actually ends, with people would be like, what the fuck?
Again, feels a little day late and a dollar short for an immortal space god, but... Not my movie, whatever. Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's where those three are. And then we get the mid-credits scene is Thena, Makari, and Druig are on their ship. And we get a visit by the Eternal Eros, who is actually the brother of Thanos, played by, I can't believe I'm saying this, Harry Styles is in the MCU. And he's actually not terrible. He was in that fucking World War II movie, Dunkirk.
Oh, that's right.
You know, where he did good, and the great Patton Oswalt, voice of Pip the Troll, and they offer to help them. Tim, what is up with this mid-credit scene? I have no idea what's going on.
So Star Fox, Eros, otherwise known as
Star Fox,
Harry Styles, who I don't think I've seen him act in anything, so could be interesting to keep an eye on. So he's Thanos' brother, as you said. He is also, like Thanos, from the comics anyway, one of the spacefaring Eternals. So I mentioned comics Eternals were all originally Earth-based, unique to Earth. At some point in their history, long story short, there was a splinter group of Eternals that left Earth for the stars, and they settled on Titan. And Star Fox and Thanos were descendants of these Eternals that settled on Titan. Thanos, as you might guess, his physiology favors the deviants. That's why he's so unusual looking. So I'm not saying they have to do that in the MCU or they're going to do that in the MCU, but it just seems to me that most logical track is, yes, these are probably Star Fox is probably one of the Eternals of Titan. He has maybe glommed on to some of the same things as our Earth Eternals, as far as what their true nature is, or maybe he's wondering what their true nature is, and just wants to compare notes with them. Pip the Troll is a character that's normally associated with Adam Warlock, was a member of the Infinity Watch, which is basically a team. Each member possessed one of the Infinity Stones. They were set up to basically prevent the Infinity Gauntlet from ever being used again. Anyway, in the comics. So I guess they are making him a Star Fox sidekick. So, you know, Patton Oswalt, good for him getting in on some live action MCU. He did did you guys see MODOK on Hulu? The kind of like
no, but I know he did voice the character.
Yeah, it was. I don't know. I really did not like it at first, but it got better as it progressed. I did end up watching the whole thing.
I only know MODOK a little bit. I have a MODOK Build-A-Figure from Marvel, and also he was in Superhero Squad, which my kids watched when they were little. My only frame of reference there. From what I've read and seen, that this is going to lead into Guardians of the Galaxy 3 with Adam Warlock.
So that makes sense. Okay.
Yep. Scott, your thoughts on this big credit scene?
I really enjoyed it. I actually thought when it was popping out, it was going to be Peter Quill as the person walking. But I will say, I want to see what happens with the... I usually say this, I want to see what happens with the casting, because like everyone shit on Heath Ledger, and even going back to 1989, everyone shit on Michael Keaton. But it felt like a wet fart when it was revealed to be Harry Styles. It feels like stunt casting to me, which I hope we're not getting there with the MCU, to be honest. But I'll see. Hopefully they kill him off in like 10 minutes. Like,
what do we have against Harry Styles? Am I missing something?
I just feel he's like more of a singer than an actor. It'd be like when
I've never seen him act, so I don't know. It just seems like there's a lot of weird vitriol based on that guy, Harry Styles,
look, when you saw Justin Timberlake in Alpha Dog, did you think the guy had acting chops? Not really.
That was a good ass movie.
He was good. No, and he was good now. But I'm saying like he had no acting before that.
Yeah.
And the guy's actually a pretty damn good actor.
He was really good in that. So I'm just like, I don't get that. Like, I get when people get pissed over like, what was the one? Ed Sheeran and Game of Thrones.
But he just
like a lot of people don't like Ed Sheeran just because they don't like his music, right? And it's just, does anybody have really strong feelings on Harry Styles' music? Like, I mean, yeah, One Direction, but wasn't that 100 years ago? Like,
he's all over TikTok a few years ago with Watermelon Sugar, whenever the hell that fucking song came out.
But I don't know. It just didn't sit right with me. Hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully we can look back and I'll be like, yeah, I really screwed the pooch with that. But I had no idea about the Guardians 3. I thought it was going to lead to Eternals 2 because that's what it felt like. And, I love Patton Oswalt. I thought, I'm glad he's actually in MCU proper because I don't think the MODOK Hulu series is part of that. So,
We can talk about it more as we go down the line, but I don't think there's going to be an Eternals 2. I mean, call me crazy. Yeah. Eternals 2, the band gets back together. I mean, I don't know. so the jury's out because they're so split off kind of thing. And there's so many other movies and shows coming. Maybe like a Eternal or a couple Eternals get their own series maybe at some point. You know, we get the Adventures of Kingo, in Bollywood or something. I don't know. But so we get another scene though at the end, and this is a scene. I don't know if it's a spoiler for me, but based on doing all these pods with you guys and knowing you guys very well now, I know how much certain characters and you love and hate, and Sean posting that he loved, because of the post credit scene. As soon as I saw things, I'm like, wait, my mind, the hamster's starting to run a wheel. I'm like, I knew what I was seeing, but then the voice. So what happens at the end, the post-credits scene, is Dane Whitman opens an old chest inherited from his ancestors that contains the legendary Ebony Blade. When an unseen person identified off-screen as Blade questions him whether he is ready for it. So Scott, we'll start with you. What did you think of this scene? Because for me, I was like, oh yeah, here we go. Because, he wasn't, when he first said, when he was trying to tell Cersei about his family, I'm like, oh, something's up with this dude. Like, I knew something was up. I didn't know what at the time. But then at the end, I was like, here we go. So, Scott, what did you think of the ending?
I loved it. I thought, like, I saw, like, like he opened it up and I was like, oh, this is where he maybe turns into like a bad guy. I was still on the bad guy thing. And then you hear, I'm going to butcher his name,
Marsha Ali.
Yeah, Marsha Ali's. And I knew that was his voice immediately. I know they confirmed it after the fact, but I was like, I remember like, I was like, that's fucking Blade. So like, we don't see him, but it's already been announced. It was announced 2 years ago that he's going to be Blade in the reboot. And thanks to Tim, when we were talking this past weekend, he's the one that told me that Blade was actually set in the UK, not New York like it was in those late 90s movies. So that...
Yeah, he's British in the comics.
So that
I don't know if he will be in the movie, but seems kind of that way.
Yeah. So I was excited for it because I love the first two Blade movies. The third one sucks ass, probably because of Triple H. But I'm really excited for that. And maybe that's where we see, you know, Black Knight again is in Blade. If we don't have an Eternals 2, Andy.
Well, I mean, you know, Sean really isn't here because he had to change his pants after that scene. That's why he couldn't really show up. Because that's what he said. I know he fucking loves his character, so I was happy for him.
He's a big mark for Black Knight, like Tim? I am.
Tim, what are your thoughts on this scene?
Yeah, I'm kind of with Sean. Finally, it's like, okay, now we're getting the payoff here. Dane and Blade don't have, like, much history in the comics, but that's okay. I'm down for this this little team up that potentially could be taking form in Blade or elsewhere. You know, I guess that's going to be our next opportunity to see these characters. And bring on the Ebony Blade. That's pretty awesome stuff. I don't think this is going to lead to like a solo Black Knight film or series or anything like that. I don't think he's a big enough character to really support that kind of project, or I just don't see them investing resources in such a B-list character. But clearly they're setting him up for these future films. So Blade, I did not recognize the voice, I will say. So that's when Scott's got over me. I was like, I don't know what that distant voice, who that could be. And then I go online, and of course, every headline you see is, you know, the director basically confirming, oh, yeah, that was Mahershala Ali. That was, and you're like, oh, Blade. So,
well, I think she's supposed to direct the Blade movie too. I read that somewhere. I wasn't quite sure, but yeah, somebody had said that she's is supposed to be directing it. I don't know. I got the handy dandy IMDb up, so let me see if it's on her page or not. Let's see.
Does it even have a release date yet? Well, by the time this podcast is released, we might have a date.
Yeah. So it's not on her IMDb, but. I maybe it was like one of those articles that, you know, don't always have like the best you know, track record, so to speak. It's very cool. We're getting new characters, a very new direction. I mean, I think it's one of those movies that may get more appreciated down the line, depending on where they could lead to. In other words, what did this movie set the table for? In a whole, not just these post-credit and mid-credit scene, but, you know, the actions of the movie. What does it, you know, lay the groundwork for? So it's very cool. But, gentlemen, so we actually are going to be back in a few weeks with Pop Goes to the Couch, because the Hawkeye series is debuting, which we're all very psyched for. We can't wait for that. Well, yes. maybe except for Tim. but he'll be here to talk about and give his opinions, I hope, you know, unless he, like, you know, doesn't, you know, ghost us.
Yeah, well, I'll say I'll be there for the first podcast reaction, if nothing else. If I really hate those first two episodes, it might be a one and done appearance. We'll see.
Tim might go back to his special guest appearance status. But then we also have Book of Boba Fett coming.
We do.
in you know, the end of December. So that's cool. That's that, and all, we'll be covering that on here as well. On Pop Goes the Couch. But the next movie, though, I mean, we could do. I mean, I don't know if you guys are going to see Ghostbusters Afterlife. I'm going to see it the weekend it comes out. I am very excited. I saw the original. I'm sure Sean did as well in the theaters. I was like 12 or something like that when it came out. So I am very excited. You know, it's got the pedigree. It's staying in the family. So I'm hoping that this leads to some fun, more Ghostbusters, because the world needs more Ghostbusters. But after that, Spider-Man, No Way Home, which we know a lot, but we still don't know shit really about like what's happening here. Like what is really happening? Cause like they're showing us one thing. We're hearing all these things and no idea. And some people
think everything is wrong. I hope everything that people think they know about that movie going in is wrong.
Well, I just know it's going to be entertaining, I think. And it's really going to lead us in more into the multiverse, I guess. If you will. So I'm very excited, and I'm very excited to hopefully talk with you guys. And maybe we have some others on here, because I know there were a few others that wanted to be with us tonight, but just, you know, for various reasons, just couldn't make it to our recording. But yeah. Guys, what else do you have out there to direct people to in the meantime, till we are back with Pop Goes to the Couch or Pop Goes to the Movies? Scott, what do you got? Social medias, pods?
Yeah, somehow you guys have roped me in. I'm doing a lot of pods now, but just check out all the pods on the Quadipods. Jenny Position, PTB, and Pop Feed's doing great work. You know, Andy, you know what I'm saying. I'm sorry, I'm tired.
I love you too, Scott.
Yeah,
great plugs.
Sorry, PTB and Wrestling Feed and the No So. I can be found at Scott_Shiflet.
Yeah, subscribe to all of our family Quadipods, including Place to Be Nation Wrestling. I do two shows over there. Those are Talking WCW and PTB NXT. Subscribe as well to the North South Connection, where I am on a regular basis with JT Rosero and a rotating special guest each episode. Going chronologically through every episode of the original Beverly Hills 90210. It is called 9021 No So. So if you want to get in on that action, reach out to me or JT. We need guests. I mean, we're not having a hard time booking guests. It's just we've got a lot of episodes to cover. So we are going to need bodies. And whether you've done a podcast, you've never done a podcast, you know us, you don't know us, you love the show, you hate the show, it doesn't matter. If you want to get in on the action, just reach out and we'll get you booked. We got, I think, a few slots open still for season one, but booking for season two already, because we're chugging along on 9021 No So.
What season was check that? Out all, was the summer one? Was it? Which season was the summer?
Okay, so they started doing the summer episodes starting with season two. And that's sort of what helped put the show on the map.
Yeah.
It was the first show that came back with new episodes, you know, that mm-hmm. early. It's like in the summer, you're getting new programming for the show that maybe you'd watched a little bit of, maybe you hadn't seen anything. But people forget how, like, lame summer television. It was just all reruns, right?
Yeah. All it was reruns and you know, summer television has gotten so much better. Yeah, it was reruns, movies being shown on TV, sports. Yeah, there was shit to watch really on TV back then. Yeah,
so they started that tradition. Seasons two and three, you know, in those high school years, you'd get that little mini, almost mini season set in the summer before their school year, and that would be pretty cool just to set you up for, you know, what you could expect in the season proper. So looking forward to covering those episodes.
Yeah. The Beach Club and everything. I may throw my hat in a ring around that period, time period.
Okay.
I did watch the show the first couple of years. I can't remember, like, you know, obviously something else I've talked about a lot, my shit memory. So I can barely remember, what happened a lot of them. So I'd have to to watch whatever. But yeah, no, I remember watching those when they were on the first time. So
yeah, very excited. We'll get you in there. And so beyond that, I should also plug the podcast network that is curated by our dear friend Jennifer Smith, where I do Talk and Pop and more MCU content, The Journey Through Infinity, where we're just going chronologically through all the films of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I guess eventually we'll get to talking Eternals again there on that podcast, but our next installment is going to be Black Panther there on The Journey Through Infinity. But I will say that I was sad Jenny couldn't join us for this review, because I thought she had the most succinct take of pretty much anyone when it came to her feelings on this film, which I believe she stated as, at times it felt like it was going for a depth of emotion that many of us have given up on. Could not have said the Jenny.
Yeah.
Could not agree more. And that's why we do so many podcasts together.
There you go. All right. Like the guy said, check out the Quadapods, Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network. I have some shows on there. I'm not sure when the next Evolution will be or Great Debate Wrestling. So stay tuned. There's lots of great content on there, though, that the Podfather is curating and putting out there for you guys, with lots of great hosts. Also, the North-South Connection, as gentlemen have mentioned, that is a great mix of pop culture, sports, and wrestling. And the Jenny Position with, you know, great, like Freak Out Driving in its reboot stage. Mm-hmm. You know, you heard of Pluto? I have. Lots of great shows, though, are on there. Geek and Sassy, you know, as somebody who pods with Miranda often, I know it's, you know, it's a little difficult with her being 6 hours from here for me.
Cross-continental. Yes.
7 hours. I mean, just think when we do the Disney pod, you know, her and Steve are 9 hours difference, and I'm you know, somewhere two-thirds of the way through. But speaking of the Disney pod, that should be coming back very soon. We're going to be covering the next two episodes will be The Fox and the Hound, which I'm actually more positive on. I used to shit on that movie, but I actually liked it a little better this time. Well, I thought it was damn fucking boring, but I was better with it this time. But it's like the reverse of my feelings on The Rescuers, which I loved as a kid, but I have so many issues with as an adult. And after that is a movie I think I've actually only seen once, and it's one of Miranda's favorites, is The Black Cauldron. That's coming after, but we're getting so close to the Disney, you know, second golden age, which mm-hmm. were the great musical epic, you know them, The Little Mermaid, Aladdin, mm-hmm. Beauty and the Beast, Lion King, those late 80s, early 90s. Really can't wait for that. Also, Year and Pop will be back in December. I'm very excited for that. And what else do I have? Laugh and Theater will be coming back at times. We have two holiday specials coming on. Hopefully you gentlemen could be on one or the other. If possible, we're going to be watching Four Christmases and Scrooged on those episodes. So, you know, I can't believe Christmas is, you know, what, 6 weeks away? Shit. Keep an eye out, because there's going to be a lot of fun content coming on all the feeds with all that. Don't forget PlaceMeNation.com each and every day. All the podcasts are featured on there, as well as we have some articles sprinkling in there. We have This Week in WWE with Trent, Polish Perspective. We have Steve Riddle's articles that he puts in there, Box Office Report, and Vintage Vault Previews. Lots of great stuff. Check out the Facebook page, Place Nation, as well as the Place to Be Facebook group, where we're having all kinds of fun stuff. And our greatest TV drama tournament is going on. We're just about to enter the third round. So, you know, there have been some beefs about some seedings, and sorry about that, but things happen. It's a lot of work, and, you know, when...
Melrose plays Sopranos, that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, that is good. Tim, I'm sorry. I think that matchup's going up tomorrow. Yeah, it's going to be fun to see how it shakes out, though. Very curious. But if you want to get on that, you got to be in the group. So make sure you request membership if you aren't already. So, for Scott Shiflett and Team Capel, I am Andy S. And thank you for joining us on this episode of Pop Goes the Movies. And we'll check you out on the next episode, which will probably be Ghostbusters Afterlife. Take care.